Hello and welcome to the Good Mood Podcast. This is episode 57, the do's and don'ts of human nutrition. This is a solo episode, and this was originally an article I wrote because nutrition can sometimes be a confusing and often even shame-inducing topic. And maybe you've had this experience where you read one headline after the next, confused about whether things like coconut oil or bananas or red meat are good for you, and struggling to figure out what foods are good, what foods are bad, what's the new diet du jour. And the truth is that the topic is very daunting. And so I wrote this article called The Do's and Don'ts of Human Nutrition, which I'm going to be sharing with you today. So settle down, go for a walk, take a listen, and hopefully at the end you'll find some clarity or even some assurance that you're on the right path already, and maybe just a little bit of encouragement to keep moving forward. And I also want to talk about the course that I released called Feed Your Head, which is it's designed to be a 4-week little mini course that you can do. And it contains a series of video lessons and articles that you can read. So you can decide if you want to listen or watch or read. And I walk you through my 4 main pillars of mental health nutrition. Because you may be surprised, or maybe not so surprised if you're somebody who follows me, that nutrition is one of my top superpowers for optimal mood, productivity, focus, energy, mental and emotional functioning, stability, a sense of calm, and preventing the dreaded decision fatigue, that feeling of complete brain deadness around 4 p.m. when you just can't make another decision, when you're elbow deep in the cookie jar, or where you're just completely like fried, vegging out in front of some sort of social media. So we know that the gut is the second brain, and when our gut is under stress or suffering from inflammation, so is our brain. And mounting research is showing us that depression, anxiety, virtually any mental health condition is a result of some inflammation present in the brain that's affecting the way we think, process our emotions, and how our mood functions. And so I use nutrition as one of the key pillars when working with patients. And it's not a big, massive change. And you're going to learn from this episode a little bit more about what some of my do's and don'ts are, but rather small, meaningful, sustainable habits that people start to develop over time, and understanding templates and how to put meals together and how to make the connection between earlier habits and actions that they've taken regarding nutrition in the day and how that affects them later on. And the goal is to support mood and hormones and mental health. And we focus on 4 main pillars: nutrient density, so getting the right amount of nutrition, the actual fuel for the brain and body; a diet that is anti-inflammatory, so focusing on the foods that are going to reduce inflammation, mop up inflammation, free radicals in the brain, and eliminate the inflammatory foods, and also identify which foods may be inflammatory in the individual. The major one that I work with, the major pillar of my 4 pillars, is blood sugar regulation. And one of my pet theories is that essentially all mental health conditions in some way are connected to our prefrontal cortex, which is sort of our like personality, like our executive part of the brain that is just run out of fuel, which sort of unleashes the limbic system and amygdala, which is our rumination and our fear and our default mode network and all these other parts of the brain that are now online because our prefrontal cortex isn't there to help us manage our mood and emotions and thoughts. And regulating blood sugar is the big one for decreasing decision fatigue. And I really go through this in my course. And then the last pillar is feeding the microbiome. So recognizing that we're not one singular being, we're actually a house for trillions of little bacteria that have a major role in regulating our mood and our brain function. And so my course takes you through these steps in short videos and texts that you can read. And I have 4 weekly challenges. So it's designed to be a 4-week course, but you can do it all at once and you get lifetime access and you can come back over and over again. It's evergreen, which means that as soon as you purchase it, you can access the courses right away. But these challenges allow you to take little chunks out of the lessons and apply them right away. And track and evaluate, the quality of your nutritional choices immediately. So there's a link in the show notes, but you can also just go to learn.goodmoodproject.ca, and the course is $34, and you get lifetime access. If you're not happy with it, you can get your money back within 14 days. So without further ado, the do's and don'ts of human nutrition. So around the same time that the American Heart Association published a paper warning the public that coconut oil contains saturated fat, supposedly leading to heart disease, Netflix released the vegan documentary What the Health, which declared diabetes to be a disease of fat buildup in the blood, among other completely absurd, slightly unscientific claims. And now, since then, the new movie Game Changers has come out. And again, all these documentaries have a similar tone where they assure you that once you, find the perfect diet, which obviously is their diet, you'll be cured of all that ails you. And so it's no wonder that around both of these incidents, my inbox and social media were bombarded with comments from confused patients or followers, family members, and friends who were alarmed that their attempts at healthy eating were being called into question by this onslaught of confusing, contradictory information. So one person wrote to me, I've been adding coconut oil to my morning smoothies. What am I supposed to do? And another person was very excited that they switched to a plant-based diet, even though we were working together to address her longstanding anemia. And so I will say this first, don't freak out. So it seems like every new nutrition-focused Yahoo News article lifts the protective rock of certainty off our health consciousness, and it sends us scuttling frantically for cover like bugs that have been exposed to the elements. And we scuttle for cover under what? Under the next diet or nutrition fad, so we can feel a sense of safety and certainty in our health choices. And you can hardly blame us, because even I, someone who studies health and nutrition for a living, can sometimes find myself caught up in this health claim game of ping pong. Because how can one claim be true if it's seeming complete opposite is also being made? So is coconut the devil incarnate, or is it the next belly blasting superfood? Do vegan diets cure diabetes, or are they so high carb that they cause it? What's the answer? And I just imagine myself watching a ping pong ball bouncing back and forth. And I just feel like I need to take my eyes off it for a second and stop to massage my neck. And I encourage you to do the same. Do understand the power of food. If there's one right diet for humans, then we certainly haven't found it and probably will not find it through our modern day nutritional research. One of the problems with finding a standardized, quote, perfect human diet is that humans are not gerbils. Our food serves various functions. A good diet fuels the body. It prevents disease and it promotes health, but it also provides us with a source of pleasure. It soothes emotional pain. It gives us something to look forward to. It serves as a reward for ourselves, our loved ones, our children. It takes center stage during celebrations, supports social cohesion, and encourages meeting attendance or blood donations. Food allows us to wallow in the luxury of our senses or to commune with the divine. Eating and making food serve as hobbies, creative outlets, and so on. Food holds a sacred place in virtually every human culture. And as a naturopathic doctor, I use food as a medicine because I know that the food we eat has the power to reverse disease and to promote health. With conditions like cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, and mental health conditions on the rise, it becomes imperative, I believe, that we make an effort to understand the health impact of our food choices. And understanding the do's and don'ts of nutrition can help us harness the power of food to heal the body and prevent disease. So do be critical of nutrition research. Nutritional research, while essential for separating the gluten-filled wheat from the chaff, is also very flawed in many regards. And this is because well-controlled, long-term clinical trials on compliant humans are nearly impossible to do. Much of the nutritional information we rely on comes from epidemiological studies, so observational studies, which establish relationships between two isolated variables, such as a food and a health outcome, so something like red meat consumption and colon cancer, for example. But when evaluating these studies, it's important not to confuse correlation with causation. This is what happened in the 1950s when Ansel Keys published his famous seven-country study that claimed to link saturated fat intake and coronary artery disease. Keys' findings led us to toss out our delicious bacon and egg breakfasts in lieu of spending the next 60 years munching fat-free yogurt and sugary cereal. Keys assumed that because saturated fat, dietary cholesterol, and heart disease were linked in the seven countries he included data for, that the relationship was causal. However, we know from current research that this is not true. Correlation does not equal causation. So, for example, other things that correlate with an increased incidence of heart disease are paying tax in Sweden and owning multiple TV sets. And while paying taxes may certainly give you chest pain, avoiding them will probably not reduce your heart disease risk. Nutrition researchers attempt to account for as many relevant lifestyle variables as possible, but there are many that they miss. For example, studies may record whether the participant smoked, drank, or exercised, but important variables such as the status of their gut microbiome or how they season their meat are often left out. For example, if you season your meat with rosemary, it reduces the carcinogenic effect of the aromatic hydrocarbons that are released in barbecuing or cooking meat at high temperature. And that's an important variable. These variables are left out, and this can be problematic because when we fail to include everything, we're bound to miss something. There's also something called the healthy user bias or the unhealthy user bias. If you've been told your whole life that red meat is bad for you, then you might, if you're going to eat it anyways, what else are you doing? Are you sort of like a Harley Davidson person who smokes and drinks and doesn't care about their health and that's sort of your identity? And if you've been told your whole life that kale is good for you, what kind of other health choices are you doing if you decide to eat kale? And so we can't account for this healthy user bias, and this confounds the research because you're going to have red meat consumption associated with other unhealthy habits, even though eating red meat may not be unhealthy. And so while nutritional research is essential for understanding how food interacts in our bodies, we certainly need to take most studies with a grain of salt. And on that note, it also shows, or a new study shows, that salt has no impact on your blood pressure. So do pay attention to what healthy traditional societies ate. Speaking of salt, any human nutrition article wouldn't be worth its weight in it without mentioning the work of Dr. Weston A. Price. Dr. Price was a Canadian dentist, shout out to Canada, who lived at the turn of the 20th century when food was becoming more industrialized. Suspecting that the increase in tooth decay he was noting in his child patients was diet-related, Price set out on a 10-year journey in the 1930s to find the perfect diet by analyzing what traditional human societies ate. He studied populations in remote Swiss villages, the Americas, certain African communities, Australia, New Zealand, and the Melanesian and Polynesian South Sea Islanders. Dr. Price took meticulous notes, food samples for analysis, and many pictures, all of which he published in his book, Nutrition and Physical Degeneration. It's a great read, and I highly recommend picking it up. It's not a difficult read. While many of the populations he studied had also begun to experience the creeping influence of an industrialized food economy, others had still managed to retain their native diets. Due to globalization and its effects on traditional communities, this type of study could never be done today. Price found some of the populations exhibited incredible characteristics of robust health. They had decay-free, straight white teeth, flawless facial and jaw structures indicating healthy bones, and no diseases. Cancer and autoimmune conditions were virtually non-existent across generations in these populations. Price noted that while the healthy population's diets consisted of a variety of foods and macronutrients, they all had very important commonalities. Don't consume processed foods. First of all, Dr. Price found that the healthiest populations somehow managed to avoid the flood of industrial food products. They refrained from eating refined flours, sugars, food additives, and vegetable oils, and stuck to their native diets of meat, eggs, dairy, fish, fruits, and vegetables. He noted that once processed foods started to creep into a population's diet, dental decay and degenerative diseases such as cancers tended to quickly follow. Don't eat anything your grandmother wouldn't recognize. Michael Pollan, author of The Omnivore's Dilemma, reminds us of some simple food rules, such as his famous eat food, not too much, mostly plants. In his book, Pollan clearly differentiates between food, i.e. something your grandmother would recognize, and something, quote, made from a plant, not in one, and, quote, edible food-like products, which tend to increasingly populate our grocery stores, kitchen cupboards, and bodies. Refined sugars and vegetable oils have increased exponentially in the average diet in the past few decades. So have metabolic degenerative diseases such as cancer, diabetes, and heart disease. It seems that the entire food industry, from the way grocery stores are set up to the way that foods are marketed to consumers to the promotion of a culture of snacking, is built around encouraging the consumption of processed, quote, edible food-like products, unquote, rather than real foods. The book, The Dorito Effect, outlines how the food industry engineers processed foods to contain taste, textures, and chemicals that override our body's hunger and satiation signals in order to monopolize our cravings, leading us to overeat. Steering clear of these packaged, processed, and overproduced food-like products is essential for promoting health. Do eat whole foods. Stick with consuming what Michael Pollan classifies as food. Whole substances that come from plants and animals that resemble how they are found in nature and that usually exist in the periphery of the grocery store. Prepare foods at home as much as possible. Avoid foods in packages that contain more than 5 ingredients, especially if the ingredients listed are unpronounceable or something your average 5th grader wouldn't recognize. As early on as the 1930s, Dr. Weston A. Price was already noting an increase in tooth decay and jaw malformation in children who were consuming the industrialized processed foods that were beginning to enter the North American diet. Since then, our consumption of processed foods, refined sugars, vegetable oils, and flours has increased, and so have our incidences of chronic lifestyle-related diseases. Therefore, eat food, not too much, mostly plants, and I added in brackets, and animals. Do consume animal products. Dr. Price found that every population he studied consumed some form of high-nutrient animal product. While some populations were vegetarian, consuming raw dairy products, none were vegan. Every healthy population consumed some combination of fish, organ meats, insects, eggs, and dairy from pastured animals. All animals consumed were obtained from nature and ate their natural diet. Cows ate grass, and poultry ate grass, grubs, and worms. These populations consume the entire animal, favoring nutrient-rich organs over muscle meat. Liver was highly valued. They use bones to make gelatin, which provides a source of bone, skin, and connective tissue building collagen. Obtaining enough organ meats, fish, egg yolks, and grass-fed beef and dairy allowed the healthiest populations to achieve 10 times the dietary intake of the fat-soluble vitamins A, E, D, and K than the typical North American. I know that most of us are not accustomed to eating organ meat, and so what I do is supplement with desiccated liver and other organs in supplement form, in capsule form, while I grow accustomed to getting organs in my diet. And I treat this like a multivitamin that I'm taking, that in addition to the vitamins that are actually now present in their natural form when I'm taking it in a whole foods form, I'm also getting things like peptides, hyaluronic acid, and other components that are found in these tissues. Do consume fat. The healthiest populations that Price studied consumed anywhere from 30 to 80% of their total calories from fat. Most of these fats were saturated, obtained from animal sources, and heart-healthy monounsaturated fatty acids obtained from foods such as olives, avocados, and macadamia nuts. Only 4% of the fat they consumed came from the polyunsaturated fats that are found in vegetable oils, nuts, seeds, processed grains, and legumes like corn and soy, and fish. Vilified for years in North America, fat is essential to the human diet. It builds our brains, nervous systems, hormones, and cell membranes. Fat is a fuel source for the brain. It aids our bodies in blood sugar regulation and the absorption of essential nutrients, like the fat-soluble vitamins A, D, E, and K. Contrary to what we've been told for the last few decades, a low-fat diet, rather than a high-fat one, is associated with increased risk of mortality. A 2017 Lancet study that observed the diets and disease risk of 135,000 people found that total fat intake, including saturated fat, was not associated with any increase in cardiovascular disease or mortality. The study also found that when saturated fat intake increased, the risk of stroke decreased. Don't consume vegetable oils. Polyunsaturated fats, or PUFAs, P-U-F-A's, exist as omega-6, so found in processed vegetable oils like corn, soy, or canola oil, and omega-3 fatty acids found in fish, nuts, and seeds. Healthy human populations generally obtained a 1-to-1 ratio of omega-6 to omega-3 fatty acids. The increase in cheap vegetable oils in our diets has brought our inflammatory omega-6 fatty acid levels up substantially to a ratio of about 10-to-1. With this increase, we see a rise in inflammatory health conditions, arthritis, diabetes, obesity, cardiovascular disease, mental health conditions, and autoimmune disease. Vegetable oils like canola, corn, and soy oil require intense chemical processing and are very unstable, becoming rancid quickly. Their high omega-6 content promotes inflammation. So avoid these oils whenever possible by avoiding store-bought salad dressings, packaged foods, restaurant foods, and fried foods. Instead, cook food from home whenever possible using the healthier oils from olives, coconut, and avocado, or using butter and ghee. Do consume fermented foods. Our microbiome, the universe of trillions of bacteria that live inside our digestive tracts, has become the subject du jour of intense medical research. The health of our guts has been associated with virtually every disease, from our mental health to our risk of inflammatory, degenerative diseases, to our circadian rhythms and our stress responses. And it's no wonder then that Weston A. Price found in the 1930s what modern science is now confirming. The healthiest human populations regularly consumed fermented foods like kefir that were rich in healthy probiotics. These populations also soaked, fermented, and spreaded their grains, seeds, and legumes to neutralize their lectins and phytates. Lectins present in grains and legumes can cause inflammation and autoimmune reactions, while phytates act as anti-nutrients, preventing absorption of minerals in the digestive tract. Fermentation supports the health of our gut bacteria and aids in the digestion of various foods. Do personalize your diet. While the work of Weston A. Price and Intuitive Wisdom, which is avoid fake foods whenever possible, can serve us in our eating choices, there was a significant amount of variability among the foods consumed in healthy human diets. So how do we know what foods will help us thrive personally? A man called Aaron Segal, in his popular TED Talk, presents a variety of blood sugar responses to different types of carbohydrate-rich food. When we eat food high in carbohydrates, our blood glucose levels can rise as those carbs are broken down into simple sugars in the digestive tract and then absorbed. Constantly spiking our blood sugar levels when done repeatedly over time is a recipe for insulin resistance, possibly leading to unwanted fat gain and type 2 diabetes and other signs of metabolic dysregulation. Segal and his team found that some foods like bananas or white rice caused a marked increase in blood sugar levels when some study participants ate them, while foods like cookies and ice cream had no effect on these same participants, and rather they slowly raised their blood glucose levels rather than dramatically spiking them. So they seem to react negatively to white rice and bananas, but not to more simple sugar like cookies and ice cream that have added fat. Then there were other study participants who experienced the opposite effect, a marked spike in blood glucose in response to sugary foods with added fat, but a more gradual increase, so consistent with healthier blood glucose control in response to things like rice and cereal grains. And so Segal found that an individual had a personalized blood sugar response to certain foods, which can be predicted by their genetics and microbiome, among other factors. And so he and his team concluded that dietary guidelines are not one size fits all. Each individual may have a specific set of foods on which they thrive. So do find your perfect diet. So how do we find our perfect personalized diet? Life coach Brooke Castillo of the Life Coach School podcast has some useful guidelines. Castillo suggests 4 questions to ask yourself when eating a specific food to find out if that food is right for you. 1, does this food taste good to me? 2, does this food feel good in my body? 3, how is this food acting in my body? 4, is this food helping me get the health results that I want? So do eat food you like, which happens to be 1 in Brooke Castillo's guidelines. As a naturopathic doctor, I know it doesn't matter how good a particular food may be. If my patient doesn't like it, he or she or they will not eat it. Finding the perfect diet for us involves eating a variety of unprocessed foods that provide us with fuel and that we look forward to eating. However, it can take a while to learn what real food tastes like if our palates have been manipulated by the chemically enhanced flavors of processed foods. Ayurveda, a 6,000-year-old medicine from India, identifies 6 tastes: sweet, sour, salty, spicy, astringent, and pungent. And according to Ayurvedic practitioners, a healthy diet consists of a combination of all 6 tastes. The standard American diet contains mostly sweet taste, with some salty and sour, which is usually from alcohol, added to the mix. Being relatively rare in nature, the human palate possibly evolved to prefer these tastes, like salty and sweet, over others, such as bitter taste, which is abundant in antioxidant-rich plants. In order to balance our diets, we may need to make an effort to consume more bitter or astringent foods from micronutrient-rich leafy green vegetables. Training ourselves to appreciate a variety of tastes may be important for finding a diet that fuels us while also bringing us pleasure. So do pay attention to how foods feel in your body. So I wonder if Aaron Segal's study subjects had had experience practicing mindful eating and body awareness, if they would have already known whether their bodies could better tolerate white rice or ice cream. I wonder if they had been paying attention to their body's cues, if it was possible that they already knew that white rice spiked their blood sugar, causing symptoms of shakiness, dizziness, brain fog, and lethargy, or increased hunger and sugar cravings fairly soon after consuming it. So I wonder if they already knew that. Whenever I see a patient, I have them record their food intake for 2 weeks along with any symptoms experienced in their bodies. And this exercise almost always proves useful in a variety of ways. Patients notice that certain foods make them feel bloated and lethargic or cause headaches, while other foods reduce their cravings and provide them with level, steady energy and moods. So paying attention to how our body feels immediately after eating or in the hours following consuming the food can provide us with invaluable information about the specific effects certain foods can have on us. Do consider working with a professional. To answer Brooke Castillo's third guideline question, how is this food acting in my body? You may need to work with someone who understands a deeper level of nutritional biochemistry and physiology. For example, you may love cheese and it may feel good in your body immediately after you eat it. However, unbeknownst to you, cheese or other cow dairy products may be causing a delayed food sensitivity reaction that produces symptoms many hours to days later and contributes to your symptoms of hormone imbalance. Cheese may be encouraging mucus production, contributing to your chronic sinus congestion. So the way different foods interact with our hormones and immune systems may not be immediately apparent after we ingest them. The effects may be delayed or slowly accumulate over time. And gaining a professional's view on the impact a food has on our complex bodily systems, including our personalized genetics and gut microbiome, can help us understand whether that food has a place in our ideal diet and perhaps what place it might have. A professional combines their knowledge of the body with your knowledge of your own body, your health history, and blood tests to help you identify which foods might not be right for you and which foods are your superfoods. Also, do eat foods that support your health goals. As Hippocrates once said, let food be thy medicine. And again, as a naturopathic doctor, I believe that nutrition has an important place in disease prevention and healing. Each bite of food that we take can have the effect, I believe, of moving us either toward health or toward illness. Our nutritional requirements will differ, though, depending on our health goals. A 71-year-old woman undergoing chemotherapy and radiation for something like, let's say, stage 2 lung cancer will be eating a very different diet, ideally, than her 24-year-old bodybuilding grandson. A 42-year-old woman who has polycystic ovaries and hopes to get pregnant in the next year will also have completely different dietary requirements and health goals. So you might love the food you eat. It might feel great in your body. You're eating unprocessed whole foods you prepare at home. However, maybe you're not feeling as amazing as you feel you should. Perhaps you feel tired. Maybe you have low libido, or you struggle to lose weight, and you may suffer from depression, diabetes, or daily digestive symptoms. So depending on your health goals, a healthcare professional can work with you to find the ultimate nutrition do's and don'ts for you and your body, your specific needs, and your health goals, and also take into account where you are on your health journey. So finally, do have courage. So dipping our toes into the deep pool of human nutrition can be a daunting yet essential act. Our dietary habits have the power to deeply influence our health. In the words of Ann Wigmore, the food you eat can either be the safest and most powerful form of medicine or the slowest form of poison. Removing processed foods from our kitchens, eating whole foods, cooking at home, eating enough of the right types of fats, developing awareness of how foods feel in our bodies, and considering working with a professional to help us reach our health goals through diet and lifestyle changes can have a powerful impact on the quality of our lives. And of course, I also want to leave off on, check out my course, Feed Your Head, on building nutritional foundations for mental health and brain health to learn more about human nutrition for your brain and mental health. And, you know, if you have someone in your family or someone you love who you're trying to get through to in teaching them nutritional habits that you're learning, maybe from me or people like me, get it for your family member, because this is something that they can pick away at one piece at a time. And I just want to leave off with a quote from the book Nutrition and Physical Degeneration by Weston A. Price. And it says, "The implication of the Price research is profound. If civilized humans are to survive, they must somehow incorporate the fundamentals of traditional nutritional wisdom into their modern lifestyle. They must turn their backs on the allure of civilized foodstuffs that line the supermarket shelves and return to the whole nutrient-dense foods of their ancestors. They must restore the soil to health through non-toxic and biological farming methods. And they must repair the, quote, greatest breakdown in our modern civilized diet, end quote, which is the gradual replacement of foods rich in fat-soluble activators with substitutes and imitations compounded of vegetable oils, fillers, stabilizers, and additives." And so I leave you with that, and know that let food be thy medicine. And take care, everyone. I hope you like this episode. Check out the courses at the Good Mood Project. So you go to learn.goodmoodproject.ca. We have Feed Your Head. I have a course called You Weigh Less on the Mood, where we combine some nutritional fundamentals with body image, awareness, and an effort to support metabolic health. And I have another course called the Guide to Food Sensitivities and Elimination Diets, where you can learn how to work your way through an elimination diet to identify what foods may be working in your body and what foods might not be.